You're listening to CJLO, 1690 AM, Montreal.
For CJLO News, I'm Danny O'Bree. Filmmaker Avi Lewis has been elected as the New Democratic Party's new leader, defeating his opposition with 56% of the vote on the first ballot. After claiming victory, Lewis stated that the NDP is united in the commitment to working-class people and looks forward to speaking with British Columbian Premier David Eby. He also stated that in an economy that is rigged for the wealthy, he intends to expand public services, such as starting federally run grocery stores and to increase corporate tax. Alberta NDP leader Naheed Nenshi criticized the result and said that Lewis becoming the federal leader was not in the interests of Alberta. Avi Lewis is a third-generation politician with both his father and grandfather being former leaders of the New Democratic Party. The Independent Investigations Office of British Columbia is searching for witnesses to police officers shooting a man and leaving him with minor injuries in Vancouver over the weekend. The Surrey Police Service says that the man allegedly confronted police with an edged weapon after they were called to a home on 81st Avenue. After officers shot the man, paramedics treated him and brought him to the hospital. The Independent Investigations Office of BC is a civilian oversight agency that looks at cases where people are injured in their altercations with police. They say that officers used both less lethal weapons and guns in the altercation. Well-known American comedian and actor Alex Duong passed away late last week of septic shock at a hospital in Los Angeles. Born Alexander Duong in 1984 in Dallas, Texas, he kick-started his career when he wrote the story Enchanted Melody, which was showcased as a stage play by LA's top theater company for authentic Asian American stories. He later appeared in popular TV shows such as The Young and the Restless, 90210, and Death Valley, but was best known for portraying Sonny Lee in the police drama Blue Bloods. He was also highly recognized as a comedian and performed stand-up at popular clubs such as The Comedy Store and The Laugh Factory. Alex Duong is survived by his wife Christina and his daughter Everest. He was 42 years old. For more information, go to cjlo.com/news.
Good evening. My name is Monica. Oh, fuck. I don't know if the audio is working. Can you hear me?
No.
Hello. We are on air now, so sorry about that little blur. Technical difficulties. This is my first time doing this. Good evening. Welcome to our show, Towards a Common Horizon. My name is Monica. We are the Montreal chapter of the national organization Common Horizon, where we bring a mass movement of everyday people to come together and take power away from the billionaire class and win solutions to the climate crisis, securing good jobs, addressing affordability, and ensuring a dignified life for all. Just so you know a bit more about organization, we have chapters across the country in Victoria, Vancouver, Edmonton, Calgary, Ottawa, Montreal, and Toronto. We are coming to you here from Montreal. Every 2 weeks, we'll be here on Sundays at 8 p.m. This is our fourth show, chatting about all things climate and affordability, connecting the dots between the systems of inequality and climate collapse, and shining light on solutions that can actually address the crisis that we face today. So my name is Monica, and I'll be your host today. I've organized with Common Horizon for the past 2 years. Before that, I was doing climate organizing in Edmonton. I'm originally from Colombia, and my favorite color is yellow. So that's me. But today we're joined by our wonderful guest, Bushra. Hi, Bushra.
Hi.
We are going to chat a little bit about the Youth Climate Corps, actually a lot about the Youth Climate Corps. So Bushra is a community organizer and executive director of the National Campaign for a Youth Climate Corps. The Youth Climate Corps will bring green jobs and skills training opportunities for young Canadians, building community resilience in the face of the climate change. Bushra is a feminist who believes that social movements and civil society are integral to having strong, vibrant communities of change. She is committed to the principles of harm reduction, trauma-informed care, and anti-oppressive practices. She has a lot of experience spanning various industries, including chief of staff at Silicon Valley tech startup, to serving 3 years as an elected representative at student unions. And now she's working also on Canadian election campaigns. She loves research, advocacy, and operation challenges. She is now, as I mentioned, executive director of the Youth Climate Corps. So, Bushra, what an honor to have you here today.
Thank you so much. It's so exciting to be here.
Can you tell us a little bit about what the Youth Climate Corps is?
Yeah, absolutely. At its core, we are trying to win a permanent, large-scale federal jobs program where basically anyone 35 and under would be able to apply and get 2-year-long paid training to do climate adaptation and mitigation work. The idea would be that, and we really imagine the training to fall into 3 different streams of education and work. So there's the first stream, which is basically like all of the work we immediately require to bring our everyday greenhouse gas emissions down. So the work to retrofit our cities, installing renewable energy, building up public transit infrastructure. I talked to a lot of municipal climate advocates, and they don't just say that they need billions of dollars to be able to retrofit a city like Toronto or Vancouver. But if they had that money, they actually don't have the labor capacity to be able to do that type of work. Mm-hmm. The second stream of jobs would be around building resilience to the climate crisis in our immediate surroundings. So everything from like conservation, ecosystem restoration, water monitoring, like a lot of the things you would associate with a climate corps. And then there's a third stream of jobs, which is around emergency preparedness and response. So everything from flood mitigation, flood response, wildfire fighting, wildfire responses, mitigation. And we also include like low carbon care work in our definition. So, I think huge chunks of Canada is often on fire for long periods of time. So like actually paying young people to make sure they support communities that are evacuating, that being paid work and well-paid work, as well as, we know that the biggest sort of climate event that leads to mass casualties is actually extreme heat. And so actually checking in on like vulnerable neighborhoods and providing support in those types of moments, especially at a time, where lots of people don't have air conditioning, and that's kind of seen as sort of this like privilege, even though it should be sort of like a protected right. Mm-hmm. So we really like the idea of jobs, the scope of it is quite wide. We're really hoping a few things in our vision. One is that these are unionized jobs that are paid at a living wage. Those are huge, especially young people right now. Like they're kind of moving from gig work to gig work and like really struggling in the employment with either precarious employment or unemployment on a mass scale. And then the idea would be that folks sort of finish their 2 years with some kind of a certification that could lead them towards long-term career pathways if they want to choose to do this. Mm-hmm. Really trying to tackle the fact that a lot of people are graduating from college or university or not even going or not finishing their apprenticeships or finishing their apprenticeships, but basically failing to like go into an industry. Especially because the job market's so bad, you have folks with like 10 or 15 years of experience basically doing the types of job that like young people in their early 20s would be doing, right? So like we're seeing folks like mid to senior level outcompeting youth. Mm-hmm. And so really like huge discrepancy, trying to solve a bunch of crises at once with this program.
This sounds like it should be happening right now.
Yeah, it's kind of like, no, it shouldn't be controversial at all.
It should not.
No. Yeah. We need more policies that try to tackle multiple crises at once, like at the scale of the crises that we face, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
What is, I guess, the history of the Youth Climate Corps in general and maybe more specifically here in Canada?
Absolutely. I could say that, okay, so it's really, really inspired by something that happened in the United States after the Second World War. You had Franklin Roosevelt sort of as the president in the U.S. and the economy sucked, right? Like just coming out of like two back-to-back large-scale global wars. And basically Franklin Roosevelt created these like new era deal policies, and within it there was this CCC, the Civilian Conservation Corps. It's basically the group that built most of the American park system. Mm-hmm. And I mean, yeah, like there's like, you know, we could do like a colonial analysis on the park system, etc., but like looking at that as an actual mass employment regime is like actually like what we're focused on, in that it hired thousands and thousands of young people, paid them a good wage to basically create a public good that is enjoyed to today. And so I would say the Youth Climate Corps really takes a lot of inspiration from that, in that we need to build massive infrastructure in our country right now to help like basically propel our country towards the future that we immediately require to bring mm-hmm. our everyday greenhouse gas emissions, while also tackling sort of the economic crises that young people face, where they're a generation or there are multiple generations that are being left behind, right? Like, and aren't actually being thought of. Like the fact that a 35-year-old is being considered youth is something that we should question, but mm-hmm. you know, I think they are actually experiencing a very similar world as someone in their early 20s mm-hmm. In terms of economic circumstances and economic security. So yeah, I would say like those are sort of like the early inspirations. And then under Joe Biden, we actually saw an American Climate Corps, like present day American Climate Corps, that was sort of mobilized on by the Sunrise Movement in the United States. It won. I would say it was a bit of a symbolic victory, just because the United States actually has a history of climate corps. So like if you look, different states have, like there's a California Climate Corps, like different states have cores, okay. And they have like, so the Americans have this sort of history. And so when Sunrise Movement won this like American Climate Corps becoming a thing in 2019, I think it was 2022, I want to say, I would fact check myself, but basically, and unfortunately, it only exists for a year because basically Trump came in and just slashed the whole thing. Yeah. And the reason why I'm saying it's a symbolic victory is because basically it was sort of a branding exercise where they brought all these programs, existing programs, together. It was really cool. There was like a pledge. The idea was they were going to get new money. They were going to get, Biden was looking for $15 billion of new money under the Build Back Better Act. Unfortunately, that was quashed and like didn't end up going through. And then Trump came and like took it all away. So I would say like the new version of it never really took off the ground. Whereas we'll see like something else kind of happening in Canada, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And then I would say like we actually have in BC, there's a group called Youth Climate Corps BC, where it's nonprofit run, so it's not government run, but it is government funded,
mm-hmm.
Where they do have very small scale programs that are doing this work. It's not, again, not at the scale that we're looking to build at the moment federally across the country. I think they might have like 30 to 50 people that kind of go through it throughout a summer.
Okay.
But they're not like, you know, the duration is short, like it's mm-hmm. 3 to 6 months, as well as the actual teams are small. But they've popped up around BC. So if you're a young person for some reason listening to this and you're from BC, check them out.
So the Youth Climate Corps in Canada, is that, from what you were just saying, is it going to be a federal program, a provincial program, or like a combination? of the two?
Yeah, so our campaign nationally, you know, we've been working on this for like over 2.5 years in terms of like pushing to create a federal long-term, large-scale, permanent program. And then last November, the federal budget actually kind of introduced and like we secured funding basically for the first time, which is huge.
Congratulations.
Thank you. Huge win. I would say it's small, but huge. You know, times are bleak. So, yeah, I mean, I would definitely classify it as an incremental win, which kind of sucks, but we have to celebrate the wins when they come.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And so basically the federal government agreed that this is a good idea. You know, they had been consulting youth for a while in like budget 2024. They said that they would consult on this program. So we really see it as sort of a project that's been coming along for a while. And so it was really cool to see that even with a new liberal administration under Carney, they like recognized how important this is. And, you know, I think they're going to realize, and I think Carney's administration is already recognizing that the commitment of $40 million is like literally nothing mm-hmm. compared to like how bad unemployment is currently. So the program is still in design. From what we know, it should be like they're planning on rolling it out for the summer. I mean, this is kind of the downside of being a campaign or the people who push for something to happen. We don't actually know what it's going to look like or we don't have that much control over sort of as it comes out. We are doing our best to sort of, you know, tell the government, like, do this or trying to sort of, like, think through and brainstorm possibilities of mm-hmm. the ways in which it could take shape and be as close to our vision. I would want to go, one thing I would say is like the big vision that I kind of talked about earlier at the beginning of this conversation, we've been asking the federal government to invest $1 billion into this, okay. Which would create 20,000 full-time jobs,
wow.
Which could, you know, like that's the, like, that's really for us the beginning of seeing scale, right? Mm-hmm. So then, you know, if a federal government comes and kind of promises $40 million, that you already know, like, it's not going to be enough, especially if you're paying young people, like, a living wage. Like, according to our math, it would create around, like, 350 jobs, which, okay. like, I don't know, like, it's the size of an elementary school. You know, so in terms of scale and especially, like, just how many young people are struggling right now, it's not enough. It's a federal program. Mm-hmm. It's wild. But it is something, and we really, like, see it as, like, our foot in the door.
Mm-hmm.
Another reason why I think we're looking at it as kind of a win is that it's housed inside of Employment Social Development Canada. And basically, the Ministry of Jobs is tasked with the creation of this program. And that's interesting because we really see, like, ESDC programming often doesn't get cut through, like, government turnover. So, like, if you see conservative governments historically, they won't touch the jobs programs.
Mm.
So, like, we really see this potentially being a way in which this could have sort of longevity, you know, where, like, I don't know what the future holds, but, like, God forbid we get a Pierre Poilievre government, you know, like, it might be safe, actually,
yeah,
you know?
To have a jobs program that's not, like, it doesn't feel as politically branded.
Exactly. As, like, it being housed inside the Ministry of Environment and Climate Change, mm-hmm. you know, because, like, that entire ministry would be shelved.
Mm-hmm. Oh, my God. Okay. There's so many things I want to follow up on, but we're going to go on a quick break. And after that, we're going to talk about the NDP convention in the context of Youth Climate Corps. And, yeah, see you guys after the break.
If you're interested in audio storytelling at all, volunteer with CJLO's news department. We'll teach you the ins and outs of audio journalism, no experience needed. You'll learn interviewing, scripting, recording, editing, and we'll support you every step of the way on your journey to producing your own original reporting. We also take a lot of pride in our local focus and coverage of the issues often forgotten by mainstream outlets. Join the team and get your voice on air by filling out a volunteer application form at cjlo.com/volunteer. Or come to one of our weekly pitch meetings, Mondays at 1 p.m. on the Loyola campus, CC430.
Tune in to the Anatomy of Creepy Music right here on CJLO 1690 AM every Saturday from noon until 2 p.m., where we examine the origins and the evolution of music from the Caribbean.
I go only
Amadiawani.
Hey, you're listening to CJLO 1690 AM.
And we're back. So hello, everyone. You're listening to Towards a Common Horizon on CJLO 1690 AM. Our show, as I just said 30 seconds ago, is called Towards a Common Horizon. And we're here chatting with Bushra Ashgar from the Youth Climate Corps, a national campaign to have good jobs that could take us into a future where both the affordability and the climate crisis are addressed. So we're really happy to have you here on the show, Bushra. I know that you were last week at the federal NDP convention in Winnipeg, where the new leader of the party, Avi Lewis, was elected and has actually championed a Green New Deal. I'm going to read a little quote that he said at the convention. So this Green New Deal would involve massively expand a youth climate corps in Canada, which would train and employ tens of thousands of young people in meaningful jobs and in their communities while addressing the generational struggle to build a climate-safe economy in Canada. So I wanted to ask you if you're excited to have the YCC campaign shouted out at the convention, what your main takeaways from the convention are, and what you think the next steps moving forward are in terms of like holding this new leadership accountable to this promise.
Yes, yeah, super exciting. What a huge win for Youth Climate Corps, for socialists in this country, mm-hmm. for anyone who cares about climate. The energy was like insane. Mm-hmm. I think like it was my first convention. I just want to say like I'm cool. I don't go to political conventions often.
But this was a cool political
convention.
Yeah,
this was a cool, it's like once in a generation.
It's the one to be at.
Yeah, exactly. I think like, you know, we'll tell our kids about this type of a kind
Absolutely.
Of convention.
I mean, you will.
Yeah, for sure. Huge win. I guess want to also say like I know Avi, he's an incredible human being. And so anyone who's listening to this, I would definitely suggest, you know, check him out, check out his policies. Like Monica was just talking about, you know, he kind of ran this leadership race and one of around basically a Green New Deal, you mm-hmm. know? And I would say like one of the things that he said is creating a million jobs, like mm-hmm. in and not like Youth Climate Corps wouldn't be like all of those jobs, but yeah. it would be like one piece of his like massive sort of platform on the Green New Deal, and it's very comprehensive, mm-hmm. And it's more than just ideas. You know, it's like talking about investing 2% of Canada's GDP on this, mm-hmm. Financed by basically sort of the oil and gas, mm-hmm. like using a windfall profits tax. We shouldn't just be in a moment where we're subsidizing these harmful industries.
It's like so ridiculous.
I know.
I'm like, come on.
It's dystopic, right? Like most of the world. So I feel like especially in a moment like this, like having a win, like an actual leader of one of the major political parties kind of echoing the sentiments, the positions of social movements in Canada is powerful. Yeah, and honestly, like, I was crying a lot, but every time someone under 20 hugged me crying, I cried even more.
Oh, my God.
Right? And I think those were kind of, like, the moments that I will remember just because I don't think there are... Yeah, life just feels so hopeless, often especially around electoral politics, you mm-hmm. know? Like, we've seen sort of this Liberal administration come in and just, like, pendulumed to the right so hard that, like... Polyev doesn't really seem to have anything to talk about besides canceling the high-speed rail project.
Dot, dot, dot.
Yeah. So, And so, like, having an authoritative and brilliant and charismatic speaker to actually talk about these ideas at the narrative level and, like, building power level, like, feels so, incredible right now.
Yeah. And actually, on that note, I want to shout out to Common Horizon's current campaign, which is exactly what you were mentioning about, like, taxing excess profits from fossil fuel companies and investing them in the green solutions that we need to transition away from fossil fuels and to address the climate crisis. I think, as you were mentioning, like, it's so ridiculous that we are in this position where most people are suffering. We see signs everywhere that we're, like, heading straight into, I mean, like, climate catastrophe, and fossil fuel companies are still being subsidized by our governments. And I think there's so much power in having, obviously, like, electing leaders that that align with our politics and, like, most people's politics, but also in seeing that these leaders got elected because a lot of people work towards it, and, like, the power of I guess still living in some sort of democracy. And I'm really excited about this win and about the possibilities that arise when we organize together.
Absolutely. Yeah. And I mean, you know, the NDP has a long way to go. Like, they did have, like, one of the worst elections in their history, I want to say. I don't know. Maybe I'm wrong. In my lifetime.
And, forever.
Like, I ran in that election, you know? Yeah. And so, like, it feels, like, exciting. They have a long way to go. But, like, having a leader and a vision and policies that are grounded in, like, what people, I don't know, I think it's just, like, it makes the work of organizing easier, you know, mm-hmm. because it's like I believe in these things and we all believe in these things, mm-hmm. and so, like, I feel like as an organizer, like, I have less of a hard time, like, trying to sell something, because
pitching,
it's like,
it.
Yeah, it's not, it's like, of course, like, why don't we need these things, right? Yeah, especially if you, like, look at the current administration, like, you know, we have a minister of natural resources who's, like, kind of diabolical, honestly. Minister Hodson, look him up. Yeah, I am not his fan.
Special mention.
Like when the Iran-Israel war started, like, he basically was like, this is a great time for the oil and gas sector here, which is fucking depraved. I'm sorry, I don't know if I'm allowed to swear.
It's okay.
Okay.
I mean, technically, no.
Okay,
it's fine.
I'm sorry.
Sorry, guys.
Yeah, but, like, you know, that's so wrong, especially, like, when, you know, like, thousands and thousands of people are dying in, like, yeah, in Lebanon and in Iran and, like, anyway. So, like, that's the take that our government has right now, is, like, how economically great this is for the oil and gas sector.
Yeah.
Instead of, like, I don't know, like, maybe we should, like, help people, like, out in Lebanon.
Maybe we should, like, stop killing people. What a hot take.
Maybe, like, no more war crimes.
No more war crimes, y'all.
Yeah.
Yeah, we're all here in the radical left.
Yeah. It's actually radical. It's a radical left thing to say no more war crimes.
Like, jeez. What are you excited about right now with respect to the Youth Climate Corps?
Yeah. I mean, I think, you know, winning this pilot is huge. We're really, like, hoping to use, like, the fact that we've won these, like, I don't know, 500 jobs or however they're going to be, however many there will be, as a way to, like, show young people that actually, if you organize on the issues that matter to you, you can win something and, like, bring more people in. And so, especially in Montreal, like, I think, like, this spring, like, we're going to be doing a lot of, like, brunches and, like, house meetings and, like, just bringing more and more people in. Like, one of the things that we've been thinking and sitting with a lot is, like, how do we reach, like, young people that aren't in colleges or, like, universities that are unemployed? Where are they? If you're listening to this and you don't have a job, look us up. You know, but it's, yeah, like, it's like, how are we finding these young people and plugging them in? Also because there's actual real jobs, like, on the horizon. And then, like, really using sort of, like, whenever, like, the program is actually launched as a way to, like, you know, like have some unemployment parties across the country and like have a good time and use that as like a huge momentum to push for a permanent large scale program so that it's not just 300 or 400 jobs, so that it's thousands.
Mm-hmm. What does, for someone who may be listening to us today, what does plugging in look like?
Yeah, great question. So our website is goodgreenjobsforall.ca. And, you know, you can just sign up, undertake action onto our newsletter. We also have a similar structure to what Monica was saying, like earlier about Common Horizon. Like we have a chapter structure. So if you're we have folks in Montreal who sort of organize on this campaign, but as well around the country. I think we have some of the strongest kind of organizing happening in the Atlantic, you know, where unemployment is like double the national average and like things are very bleak. But plugging in looks like basically signing up to be on our newsletter so that we know we have your contact information so that when there's an event happening, we can hit you up. We're also on Instagram at Good Green Jobs for All. The four would be the number four. Mm-hmm. hit us up. Join a brunch in the city. Meet folks who are working on this. Come hang.
I'm so excited to do a brunch.
Oh my God, okay, I'm going to hold you to it.
Oh my God, yay. when did you get involved in this campaign?
Yeah, I started working on it August of 2023. It's funny, I got like an email from Seth Klein, who I guess I forgot in this story.
Shout out to Seth.
We love Seth. For those who don't know, Seth's like a pretty incredible like climate communicator in the country and academic. He has a column with Canada's National Observer. He also has a Substack that he just created recently, but he wrote a book called A Good War, Mobilizing Canada for the climate emergency, I think. It's a long title. But basically, he like, he's, even though he's like a peace activist originally and isn't super inspired by wars, he wrote this book basically like taking in lessons from the Second World War and the ways in which the Canadian economy at that time of only 11 million people kind of transformed its economy and like looking at how basically, governments can do big things in a time of emergency and how we're in a climate emergency and, like, what are those lessons that we could be implementing those measures? Mm-hmm. And, he talks about basically use Climate Corps in it. And he had this 5-year project called the Climate Emergency Unit, which basically held the Youth Climate Corps campaign in it alongside a bunch of other climate campaigns. They were like trial and erroring and it was really cool. But yeah, he sent me an email.
Oh, wow.
And was like, hey, like, you want to work on this?
Oh, wow.
And I was like, wait, is this Seth? Like,
what a celebrity.
Naomi Klein's like brother? Like, why are you emailing me? But anyway, yeah, so I took a call and then the rest
is history.
Yeah.
Oh, my God. I love that. It's been such a journey. And it's been also so nice. I don't know. I feel like I'm revealing how tiny I feel sometimes or how tiny I am. But I remember like when the campaign just started, just like looking at you guys being like, whoa, that's so cool. And then last year we met organizing this event at Draw the Line. I'm like, I'm going to meet Bushra.
That's so funny. Stop.
And I don't know, like just seeing the win last year in November has been super exciting. And oh my God, Bush is taking a picture of you right
now.
Just so you know. So yeah, it's really exciting, really amazing. I'm curious, are the jobs that the Youth Climate Corps would be implementing, are they concentrated largely in like cities or, because you mentioned this pilot project is only 300 jobs and I know that the campaign or like you guys don't directly have a lot of say in like what these jobs are, but in your ideal world, like how are these jobs like distributed across communities, across urban rural settings? Is it because you mentioned those three areas, but do you have a sense of how that would play out?
As you're saying, we don't have so much control over sort of the final whatever it will look like. We do know that it might be part of the youth employment and scale strategy. So the federal government has this like yes strategy, and it's basically like the umbrella program under which they have like a bunch of employment programs. Canada Summer Job is one of the 16 sort of big things that they do to like give young people skills and training. Mm-hmm. I'm sure if you're a student at some point, you know, you've had a Canada Summer Job. Like I was an intern once at a Northern Ontario Chamber of Commerce for a summer through a Canada Summer. Yeah, it was the worst job ever.
What did it do?
I don't honestly, like, it was kind of a grift. I hope the Youth Climate Corps isn't a grift. But no, like, I remember, like, the guy, like, the president of the Chamber of Commerce, like, he kind of left halfway through my internship and ran in the election, the municipal election. So, anyway.
Wild.
Yeah. Northern Ontario is kind of a trip. But to answer your question, honestly, we have these principles, these campaign principles. And so from the beginning, we've said that there should be like regional distribution to the funding, and like there should be a focus on rural communities. Mm-hmm. For example, like one of the things that we said is like these jobs should ideally be like materializing local climate action plans. Mm. And, you know, in rural areas, oftentimes there are no climate action plans. So like one of the things that a youth climate corps could do is actually create those climate action plans, especially in places where municipalities are like volunteer run. Mm-hmm. 'Cause we've heard from basically folks in those communities that not having a climate action plan actually stops them from being able to it's basically an obstacle. Like when there's federal money on the table, they can't access it because they don't have these plans already created.
Interesting.
Yeah.
That sounds like a very large challenge. Mm-hmm. And I guess like larger municipalities, like cities that would have an action plan, this kind of funds and jobs would be directed towards like actually implementing or like improving on those plans as well.
Yeah, absolutely. So, I mean, you know, we've recommended that the federal government like really work with every level of government on creating this. So like let's like use like Montreal as an example, really working with like the city of Montreal, the public utilities, Hydro-Quebec, mm-hmm. SDM to like find like basically like find what projects need fund, like where the jobs needed to be worked on are, right? Yeah. Like Hydro-Quebec is actually a good example because they oftentimes they're like, this is all the infrastructure that needs to be built. Like these are the jobs that like require funding, but like no one's funding them. Mm-hmm. You know, like we're kind of in this moment where like the prime minister is like build, baby, build. And like we're going to build a nation. And like, but like you actually hear from like, for example, Legault and even like, I think folks in the industry being like, we actually don't have the labor capacity to build massive infrastructure projects right now. Like around 700,000 skilled trades people are set to retire by 2028. And actually there isn't a replacement cohort. So you can't just be like, we're going to build a massive infrastructure project. You can't just expect workers to show up if you don't train them. And we have a huge gap that like, a policy like a Youth Climate Corps could fix if the government was showing up to the table with the right amount of money.
Mm-hmm. That's fascinating. I think there's like so much work to be done, and it's exciting that y'all are like have been successful in implementing like a pilot and that it's going into that direction. But like, yeah, I guess if we want to see an energy transition, thinking about like from where we are now to training people to actually like changing the way we operate as a society, it's a bit daunting.
It is very daunting. Yeah. Especially when you're like, oh my God, they just gave us just 40 million. But what is cool is like, yeah, it's like the building blocks of things and anything that's created, like, I don't know, I've had to just tell myself that the pilot's going to be not good.
Why?
It's not going to meet my expectations just because I think, you know, they're trying to do it quick and I don't know. There's, of course, there's so many parts of me that just doesn't trust the government, even though I'm in this work, to be like, the government needs to intervene to do these big things.
Yeah.
But just because the pool of money is just so small, right? Like, I think to be able to really, like, implement a vision this big, like, you need to actually believe that it's going to work and it not just be some kind of a branding exercise.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, I am hopeful, but I'm also cautiously, like, I don't know, I'm always like, you know, I got to hold my heart and, like, be ready to be disappointed. And, I mean, maybe it'll be better.
Yeah.
But it won't, like, I just think with $40 million, you can only do so much, you know. And so, yeah. I'm excited to see it. I'm really excited to see new jobs on the table and, like, new people hired and be able to, like, feel, you know, like, the good, yeah, that we did that. And then, like, use that sort of momentum to push for more because, yeah, like, there's a lot of young people who are unemployed. And I think it's going to get worse, right? Like, this, we're, like, living through, like, a large-scale war right now. I mean, it doesn't hit our borders, of course. We're, like, quite on the peripheries. But it's going to have a mass impact on employment, especially the types of jobs that young people do. Like, we're seeing in East Asia and, like, you know, Australia and, like, basically, like, people have basically COVID-like restrictions, you know, where you have curfews, you're not going out to restaurants. And,
wow.
And so it's like, what happens when that happens? Businesses are shut down, recreational spaces are shut down, and who works at those places? Young people, right? So I think it's going to be a compounding sort of a crisis. And so maybe this will sort of lead to the government, like, looking at the programs they've already committed to and, like, realizing that they need to double down a bit. Yeah.
Yeah, that's really important. Okay, so now we're going to go into another quick break. But just as a reminder, you're listening to CJLO, Towards a Common Horizon. And, yeah, we'll be back in a second. Thanks so much, Prisha.
CJLO is announcing the inaugural edition of Dead Air. From April 9th through 12th, CJLO is taking over La Sotorenia for 4 days of emerging music discovery. On Thursday, coming out to the Kingdom of Birds album launch with Ekka and Shunk. Friday is all-night pop with 17 Sport, Faima, Sarah Feldman, and Wicked Easy. Saturday, we're welcoming Brooklyn's Hiding Places for the launch of their album, The Secret to Good Living, where they'll be joined by CJLO faves Knitting and Sasha K. Closing off the festival is a stacked lineup of Kelly Elizabeth, Angela Begin, and Museums. Individual tickets are available now, and a Dead Air festival pass is just $40, and that'll get you into all of the shows. Follow us at Dead Air MTL on Instagram and Dead Air Festival on Facebook. Hope to see you there.
Our talks about movies always start out with the best of intentions. Opinions are shared, debates develop, but then things get heated, words get said, friendships are tested, disagreements break out. This is when the smackdown happens. Join us for our next epic grudge match, Sundays at 2 p.m., Cinema Smackdown, right here on CJLO 1690 AM.
Welcome back. You're listening to CJLO 1690 AM. My name is Monica, and we're here with Bushra talking about a youth climate core. How are you, Bushra?
So good. Yeah.
Okay, so a youth climate core is this very exciting program that we've been talking about for the past little bit. And yeah, it's a federal program that would create millions of jobs in the country to transition into a green economy and address the affordability crisis, the climate crisis. And this past November, Your Eyes' campaign actually won a pilot in the federal budget. So I am wondering, How did this happen? Like, what was the trajectory of getting the campaign to that place? What were some of the tactics that you implemented that you thought were effective? And what was that journey like?
Yeah, thank you for this question. I can tell like a little bit from my perspective, just like, so I first came on the campaign sort of the fall of 2023, mostly only working in Toronto. And we did this like, I don't know, we've always been like kind of creative and like just we did this action in Toronto where we basically collected like, I don't know, over like 700 like mock applications, like they were real applications, but basically we got like 700 young people to like submit a job application to the Minister of Youth at that time, who was Marcy Ian, and we held like a little press conference outside her office, you know, to generate some media to bring attention to this idea. So like we've done like kind of creative actions like this, which have been sort of fun. I mean, yeah, you might be like, why are you making young people do another job application? Like, cover letters suck. But I think, yeah, like just being a bit creative to demonstrate like, you know, kind of the experience of how bizarre it is that actually, you know, I'm sure it's not that hard to find a young person right now who's actually submitted over 200 cover letters Absolutely. And not found a job, right? Mm-hmm. I would say then one of the other things that we've done, oh, so this led to an MP who was like an NDP MP at the time. Unfortunately, she's no longer in power. She represented the riding of Victoria. She actually brought a motion in support of the campaign to the House of Commons following our action. Now, it was kind of symbolic because, like, private members' motions don't hold that much power. But, like, from what I understood going through this was, like, the language exists around this if it were to ever become a legislation. You know, they can kind of go back to it. Mm-hmm. But I think one of the reasons why this was kind of important was she was able to use her relationships within like the Liberal Party, who had a majority at the time, but were kind of unpopular, to basically bring Liberal MPs on board. And so then we saw like a whole swath of Liberal MPs starting to support this campaign. Folks like Patrick Wyler from Sea to Sky, Sunshine Coast in BC, Adam Vancouverden and Hamilton. And then basically like spring of 2024, we held this like online town hall with speakers from across every political party except for the Conservatives.
Oh my God, I was there.
Oh, yay. That's so cool.
I'm like, 2020? That's okay. Yeah. Continue.
Incredible. But yeah, we really used this town hall as a way to like kick off a huge organizing push. We referred to as like the Communities for Climate Corps. You know, we got endorsements from different cities like the city of Toronto, the city of North Vancouver. Wow. And yeah, we basically got folks to like organize in their communities, meet with their MPs, use the we've leveraged our, like, you know, some of the political processes. Like, we've gone to the House of Commons Finance Committee and like as expert witnesses talked about why this investment could be important and critical. You know, we also organized a really cool webinar with some Indigenous climate leaders, youth climate leaders, like from Sacred Earth Solar and Indigenous Climate Action and Indigenous Clean Energy, talking about how a youth climate corps could like further propel the work that they're doing and like talking about an Indigenous jobs revolution. It was a really amazing conversation, and actually we've been working on a policy brief, this group of us, that's finally going through its like editorial process and should be published in the next few months with the Yellowhead Institute based out of the Toronto Metropolitan University. It's an Indigenous think tank, which could be really cool. You know, I when I did my master's thesis, I would look at Yellowhead Institute and their policy briefs and like cite it in my master's thesis. So it's really cool to be able to like do that work as well.
What was your master's thesis about?
That's a great question. It was actually on 1492 Landback Lane.
Wow.
Yeah, and like Indigenous settler relations and like resistance and solidarity and yeah, how settlers show up to this work. Yeah, so it's actually really funny because Serena, who's the managing director of Sacred Earth Solar, she's from the Haudenosaunee community that like led the 1492 Landback Lane work. Wow. And do to this day. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, very cool. Very cool. Yeah, she's a baddie.
You're a baddie.
Thank you. But yeah, like kind of, yeah, we've just been doing really cool organizing stuff. Like, I feel like, you know, Draw the Line was kind of one of them. Like, mm-hmm. I don't know. We didn't talk about it, but
let's
like,
talk about Draw the Line.
Yeah. Like last fall,
yes.
Monica and I worked in this like big coalition of different social movements, you know, climate justice, migrant justice. We had the anti-war movement there. Mm-hmm. We had Ellen Gabriel there, mm-hmm. Speaking and basically kind of like had these, and it was a Canada-wide day of action, really trying to tell the Carney government sort of these, the people's agenda almost, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. Like what we care about, the pieces that need to be funded instead of funding war and destruction. And
how like all these things are connected, the solutions are very obvious and we should just do it.
Yeah. And it was such a fun event. And I mean, yeah, one of the demands of that day was actually implementing the Youth Climate Corps, because, you know, I think one of my favorite things about this campaign is that it's not just like, don't do this, don't do this. It's like, do this. And this is this sort of like hopeful vision of what the world could look like, you know. Mm-hmm. I think there's a lot of, when you look at the sort of polling data around support for something like this, you know, like 1.3 young million people want to join and support the creation of a Youth Climate Corps. That's huge.
Mm-hmm.
And it's actually a climate policy that young men far outweigh their support for than women.
Really?
Yeah.
I wonder why.
That could be cool. I think it's maybe the sense of duty.
Yeah. Love when men get involved.
Yeah.
Where are the men?
Yeah, bring them out.
If you were a young person and you wanted to apply to this program, what would be the way to do it?
Okay, because the actual program isn't live right now, one of the things that I've been saying, like I was just at Dawson College earlier this week, was, you know, go to our website, go to Take Action, go to join the campaign, and you can sort of sign up for our newsletter. This is like going to be one of the best ways to stay up to date as the jobs roll out.
Mm-hmm.
We'll be doing a lot of media around it. We'll be doing physical events like unemployment raves, maybe. I don't know. Come help us organize one, maybe at Club Block or
Let's
Cafe
do
Block.
It.
Yeah. Yeah, so definitely subscribe to our newsletter, because that's like one way you can get that information. Other than that, I guess, I don't know, follow the Ministry of Jobs,
yeah.
like the federal government, and like they'll definitely be doing announcements as the jobs roll out. Yeah.
With this program, fully just fund new jobs, or would it also support like existing programs that kind of align with a transition?
I think that actually the latter,
mm-hmm.
or I think it might be a mix.
Mm-hmm.
New jobs versus existing jobs, because one thing that I failed to talk about is actually the ways in which this is not really like what we're fighting for, right? I talked a little bit about how in our vision, this is a public jobs program and these are government jobs. And so we know we're living through a moment of extreme austerity, like our government is funding the military by billions, except, and they've cut like a lot of public sector jobs.
Mm-hmm.
So like our vision always, like in our vision, these were public sector jobs. Like mm-hmm. these would be like federal government employees, like doing work at the local level. But that's just like not possible right now. So the way it's being rolled out is basically kind of like Canada Summer's Job, where it's gonna be rolled through, you know, a bunch of sort of like nonprofits. Mm-hmm. Maybe the city, like it depends on who applies for the funding, basically.
Yeah.
So it might be a mixture of the creation of, like, I don't know, you know, you apply for funding from the federal government to do work. Those could be new jobs if they've never existed before, right?
Yeah.
It really depends on, like, I think it might be a mixed way. It's hard to tell at the moment.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, and that's one of the things that we're really, like, looking at as, like, not a win, right? Like, no shade against the nonprofit world. We believe that this policy needs, in order to actually create a dent in the type of work we're trying to tackle, which is the climate emergency, creating like 500 jobs in the nonprofit sector isn't going to cut it. Like, we really need large scale public jobs programs like doing this. And like the other thing is, like, there will never be there won't be an economic incentive to do this, right? Like, this is why we can't depend on like the private sector to do this, right?
Mm-hmm.
So that's why the state kind of has to do it, because these jobs have to be done.
Mm-hmm.
Like, we have to build out public transit infrastructure. Like, we have to retrofit our homes.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like a common sense thing to do, because at the end of the day, we're paying larger energy bills.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it's like we are going to reduce not just emissions, but actually the cost of energy that we pay every month if
yeah.
we had retrofitted buildings.
Yeah.
And who's really that cost coming down to? Like, everyday taxpayers, you and I, mm-hmm. you know? And it's worse for tenants.
Mm-hmm.
So these jobs have to be done. The nonprofit simply can't, like, the system can't absorb, like, you know, 20,000 jobs or mm-hmm. $1 billion for that matter. Like,
mm-hmm.
they would completely collapse. There isn't a nonprofit in the country that could take $1 billion and, like, create a program. So, like, that's why in our vision, like, it really has to be the government that leads this work. And we have yet to really, that's, I think, like, our big win, and we will get there one day. Yeah.
I also don't know if you've mentioned it before, but these jobs that the program would be created, how long would they be for?
Yeah, it would be like a 2-year long program. And,
mm-hmm.
and yeah, this is key because, you know, one of the things that we've heard from the labor movement, for example, is that this is a great idea, but if it's anything shorter than like 2 years or like, you know, it needs to be a meaningful duration. Like, we're not just teaching young people to install one solar panel.
Mm-hmm.
Like, the piece around this being a long-term career pathway is actually really, really key. And, like, the idea would be, through this job, you're learning a skill that you didn't have before, you know? That's really important. Like, so the people hired, ideally, the young people hired in the job training program wouldn't bring the necessary skills to do the work and would actually learn and take those skills away to be able to do that work further.
Mm-hmm.
And so the duration is really important because, you know, you need to spend a bit of time in order to meaningfully learn a new skill.
Yeah.
And that be able to translate into a long-term career pathway if you want. And like that then, you know, removes the sort of risk of de-skilling this like labor.
Mm-hmm.
In these sort of traditional workforces.
Mm-hmm. I'm so excited about this actually happening.
Yeah, me too. Well, you know what? I don't know. I think like the $1 billion is on the horizon. Like, I see that.
Mm-hmm.
I think, like, of course, the pilot like makes it like, oh my God, we're close. It's hard to be like, I don't know. Government relations is so annoying. Like, I really don't like the government. But yeah, it's hard to be like in the labyrinth of trying to deal with the federal government.
Mm-hmm.
But I really think like I just don't see a world in which the Carney government can maintain its popularity without really doing anything. And I don't see like any solutions on the table. I don't really like see them. Yeah, like what are they doing for young people right now? Like, in general, like, I'm not even going to climate because mm-hmm. I know this is the only thing that they're doing for climate. It's mm-hmm. actually, like, super embarrassing. But Mark Carney has, like, when he's been asked on climate mm-hmm. on in the House of Commons, like, he's talked about the Youth Climate Corps. Wow. And I'm like, you're telling me that in your $500 billion budget, your investment of a $40 million is your demonstration of how you're dealing with climate? Like, that's so embarrassing.
Yeah. Do you, if you see that $1 billion in the horizon, what do you see as, like, what's missing to get there? How can people help that path?
Okay, well, one of the reasons why I say I see it on the horizon is because I've always believed, like, I mean, even before we won, like, I just think this is so smart.